I give credit to all the community of Huntington Beach. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate all of you. I swear that I promise you. I promise. I'll keep my word and keep my name strong, and I'll fight for you. You are my conduit to this city, and I'm going to make sure that I fight for you guys. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you, and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined, as always, by the city councilman of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. I feel like I sold you short there. You're much more than the city councilman.
Yeah, well, I mean, where I live, we don't even have a city council. I mean, I'm on well water, so we're in a local service district. Call it what it is, really. I mean, we're under 5 to 10 centimeters of snow at any given day now. We're in the minus temps up here. It sucks. Straight up sucks.
High 91 here in Phoenix today. All right, Craig. On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Khabib's return, Tough 29, and what's next? I mean, what's first for Michael Chandler? We begin with the light heavyweight division and Israel Adesanya. Craig, Dana White confirmed this week that Israel Adesanya will challenge Jan Blachowicz for light heavyweight title in his next fight. So I know why this makes sense for Jan Blachowicz, and I know why this makes sense for the UFC, but for Israel Adesanya, I mean, yeah, we all want to be double champs, but is this going a long way just to troll or potentially draw out John Jones?
Yeah, it makes zero sense to me. And this is so weird because we went to do the pick'em videos on Monday night. And right before we got to our main event prediction for Santos and Teixeira, we all know how Santos and Blachowicz went. So we're getting ready for the fight. And I said, Matt, this fight doesn't mean anything anymore. So you just made a main event for fight night mean nothing. Why wouldn't you have waited until after that result to announce the fight? Why did you have to wait until a fight night where did it really matter that Israel Adesanya was there for that? I didn't think so. I mean, hey, it's cool that he's there and Silva loses to Hall. And then it's like, all right, well, Silva's career is probably over. Maybe signs with Bellator or Ryzen for a one-off or something. But that was kind of the conversation. And then Dana White out of nowhere just goes full bombshell like, hey, oh, by the way, Israel Adesanya is going to fight Jan Blachowicz. Newsflash. Like, why? Why? So now you have a main event this weekend that means nothing because the winner of Santos Teixeira, one's 36, one's 41. Like they're not getting any younger. So what's the point of doing that? And then, and I know we're going to get into it later, you just had a co-main event of a pay-per-view that meant nothing. So what was the point of any of those fights? Like I'm still rattled that I had to pay $69.99 Canadian to watch 8-2 Phil Hawes fight 4-0 Jacob Malkoon, and I will take that to my grave. Why did that fight you know why that fight happened? I'm going to go down a rabbit hole, John. You really upset me here. That fight happened because Malkoon, who was 4-0, was a training partner of Robert Whittaker, and the UFC did him a favor. They said, hey, bud, you're having a hard time getting fights? We'll give you a fight in the UFC. Well, Jacob Malkoon got his ass kicked in the first minute. Whittaker goes out there and puts on a vintage Whittaker performance, and it meant nothing. So those guys got to go back to Australia with their tails between their legs, having zero victories, truly. Now you have Adesanya taking on Blachowicz. Why? Why? I get it. Like you said, it's a conduit for Adesanya to take on John Jones, and it's a little bit easier to say, hey, throw the belt up like The Rock. We got a double champ here. And John Jones going back to reclaim what's his. And maybe John Jones does the old-timey Anderson Silva and has a one-off at heavyweight against whether it's, you know, Stipe or Ngannou or whoever it is. But why? Why do we have to have Israel Adesanya and Jan Blachowicz? Middleweight was so held up when Michael Bisping was the champ. Does anybody forget about that? Bisping fights Rockhold. Then he fights, how old was Dan Henderson? 45 or 46?
I think he was, when he fought Bisping?
Yeah.
45.
I thought he's 40. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Barely wins that fight and then takes what? A year and a half off to fight a guy coming out of retirement? Like this middleweight division's a joke and this organization makes no sense. It's like, whose line is it anyways?
Well, I agree with everything except for, you know, we kind of had a pact before this podcast started that we're going to stay
Don't care.
The U.S. elections.
I do care.
And we are. But all I'm saying is the more that you watch this sort of stuff and you start to figure out this person's path to this and that person's path to that, what's it going to take? And you start putting your mind that way, you realize that if the UFC lets John Jones fight for the heavyweight belt and he wins, and the UFC lets Israel Adesanya fight for the light heavyweight belt and he wins, you get something that's probably never happened in the history of the promotion or MMA, which is two double champs fighting each other. And that's the only way. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, Craig. We talked about you can't get John Jones and Israel Adesanya in a cage together and have it be a main event unless one of them has a belt. You can't, because there'd be no championship fight. Now, I'm from the camp that I believe that we were talking about all kinds of creation of belts and all that stuff. I'm from the camp that you wipe the thing clean. Israel Adesanya and John Jones is enough. You put no belts on the card.
Yeah.
And then you make them the main event. But that's not how the UFC thinks. So this is the path towards bringing those two together. Now, let me ask you a question before you lose your mind. If John Jones wins the heavyweight belt,
I don't think he does.
Israel Adesanya wins the light heavyweight belt.
I don't think he does.
Is that not the biggest fight ever?
No.
You got to roll those dice.
I don't think it's the biggest fight ever. This is where it gets weird for me. So, again, we're always talking pound for pound. Everybody's talking pound for pound. People have been hitting me up in the DMs about pound for pound. And in the YouTube comments after last week's video, which, hey, I know we made it this far into it, but we really do appreciate those YouTube comments. Keep them coming. And I know my dad over on my right hand of the screen, he loves those comments. But if we really get into this, I think that Jones loses to Miocic. I still think Jones, you know, greatest pound for pound, just based on the quality of wins and the names that are on his resume. Israel Adesanya, to me, is the biggest star that the UFC has right now. Here's a question for you, John. Israel Adesanya is the biggest star in the UFC. Why didn't they announce this fight when Khabib beat Gaethje? Was it because they knew he was going to retire? Was it because that was such a momentous occasion? Because it didn't seem like it sold all that well. Why did they do this with Israel Adesanya on a fight night card where Anderson Silva was going to retire? There wasn't a lot of media attention with that card from what I saw. And why did they only show Israel Adesanya a couple times during the broadcast? They hardly made a big deal whatsoever about Israel Adesanya being there. If he's your biggest star, wouldn't you market him a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, it's a curious play by the UFC. It doesn't fall in line with the things they normally do. It almost seems like Dana was just being candid. And I don't want to say let something slip, but, like, you know, he was just like, hey, this is what we're working on for them. Leave me alone about Adesanya. This is the deal. Or maybe he was trying to, you know, push down a Whitaker fight, or, you know, he just kind of got swerved. Typically, Dana doesn't even swerve. Didn't say anything he doesn't want you to hear, but it did seem odd.
All right, John, we will move on to our next topic. And we talked last week at length about Khabib's career and his legacy. Well, apparently it's not so fast, my friend, as Dana White said that Khabib Nurmagomedov, and the quote is, I have a feeling that he might go for the 30-0. John, a couple quick questions. One, what's the point? And then two, who's number 30?
So the point, the only point for Khabib, and this is going to be quick for me, the only point for Khabib is GSP. That's it. That's all he has left. He basically cleaned out the division, depending on how you feel about Tony Ferguson. I think that, yeah, Ferguson lost to Gaethje, but styles make fights. I still think Ferguson and Khabib should fight. If he's going to go for 30-0, it will not be Tony Ferguson. I can promise you that. He's going to go for 30-0 against something like Kamaru Usman, or it's going to be Kamaru Usman, or it's going to be George St. Pierre. That's it. It's either going to be the double champ of 170, or he wants the big payday with George St. Pierre. That's the only reason to go for 30-0. There's no other fight out there, I think, that holds that level of importance for him. So the point would be to get to 30-0 because he wanted to, and it's got to be to sort of put a dent in GSP's legacy.
You know, I agree with you. And I mean, GSP's been, well, A, he's been my guy since Jump Street, like favorite fighter, how I get into MMA, this and that. It's GSP, Shogun Hua, and Lyoto Machida. They're my big three right there. But if I really think about this, who are some of the names that could pop up? Well, Gaethje was kind of the boogeyman. He seemed like the guy that was, I wouldn't say a foregone conclusion, but if there was anybody right now in that lightweight division to get a win over Khabib, it was Gaethje. Well, you saw what happened in that fight. Khabib kind of toyed a little bit, got kicked in the legs, and absolutely dismantled him. It was amazing. I think GSP, I don't even know about Usman. There's only a few select names. Would it have to be a big pay-per-view draw? I don't think so. So it wouldn't have to be the biggest of names, but it would in a sense, because this is almost like when Floyd Mayweather did the 50-0. It's got to be somebody that's going to draw somewhat. There's only two names that used to be lightweights that are now welterweights, and even those guys don't hold water. If Masvidal didn't lose to Usman, there's your fight. And if Nate Diaz didn't lose to everybody, well, there's your fight. But it's not going to happen with those guys. It's not going to happen with McGregor again. Habib doesn't want the fight. So to me, it's got to be GSP.
You know, I'm with you. I think it should be GSP. I don't know what held it up before. I think that we talked about this last week, which is, you know, the way they make this fight happen is to make the 165 belt, because a GSP has no desire to go to 55. If he had a desire to go to 55, he'd have gone there by now and they would have fought. Unless the money's not right, and I can't imagine the money not being right. But because here's where it gets weird for GSP. If you're the UFC, you don't need GSP necessarily because he's been gone for so long. But if you're GSP, you're like, dude, I'm still the A-side. Even in a fight against Khabib, he's the A-side. So he's looking to get paid like the A-side. So if Khabib's getting $10 million, what do you give GSP, 15? And the UFC's like, we don't want to pay $15 million to a guy who's not going to defend a belt. We're going to give him potentially.
And I mean, first you look at it and the NFL, there was Troy Polamalu and now it's Pat Mahomes. And all I see is those stupid commercials. Why don't we get GSP in the Head and Shoulders commercials? Look at the guy's hair. He's got better hair than I do.
Now that he's got hair, it's time. All right, Craig, this week, our old new friend came out and said it's time for him to get off his tuchus. Michael Chandler, and calling for a bout with Tony Ferguson or Justin Gaethje, said, I would like a top five guy right away. Craig, I know this kid was fit and ready to step in there with Khabib, but so was Ally Aquinta, and we kind of kept our heads about him, didn't we? So does Chandler deserve a top five fight, or should he be staring down Kevin Lee and his odd tattoo in his debut?
All right, so Kevin Lee wants UFC and EA Sports to change the way he looks in the video game because this head tattoo that he just got, it's weird. It's just weird. You know what's funny, John? So for last week's episode of Early Stoppage, if you missed it, I implore you, go back and have a look. I got a little sneaky with the thumbnail. John knows this. And if you're watching on screen, you can see how enthused he was about it. But I went a little sneaky with it. It was one of our topics. And Charles Oliveira said, hey, let's have a lightweight tournament. So little inside baseball. I like to do this in the fight picks, the inside baseball references. When I went to do up the graphic, I was kind of having a little bit of writer's block, or graphics block. So I went and looked at the Bellator Grand Prix kind of tournament style that they had, and I modeled it a little bit after that. I paid homage to Bellator, and then I looked at the UFC rankings. Well, what did I do? I actually really screwed it up. I wasn't even thinking about it. I went, all right, 8-1. We have, who is it? Carlos Diego Fajeya, Charles Oliveira, Paul Felder. It might be Felder before Oliveira. It doesn't matter. But I went 8-1, and then I went, well, Diego Fajeya deserves to be in it, but I'm going to kick him out, and I'm going to put Michael Chandler in there. So I do remember what the first-round matchups were, and the bracket was stupid. I had Chandler and Felder. I had Oliveira and Ferguson. I had McGregor Poirier 2, and I had Dan Hooker, Justin Gaethje. And I posted that on Reddit, and I got torched. Everybody hated it. This is the worst bracket I've ever seen. It's so top-heavy on one side. I went back and looked at it, and I thought, hey, I think this is kind of neat. Like, I'd like to see some of those fights. Yes, it might be an easier path for one guy from one side, but whatever. I thought it was a lot of fun. So to bring that back and answer this question here, what's a fight that makes sense for Michael Chandler? Unfortunately, being the big Bellator fan that I am and having watched Michael Chandler's career to this point, I agree with a lot of the commenters in a certain respect where Michael Chandler, yes, has been knocked out by a career featherweight in Patricio Pitbull. And he's shown susceptibility to getting hurt by big shots. He's a great wrestler. We know that. His jiu-jitsu is good. But if Brent Primus can get your back in the second fight, I worry about him taking on the Oliveras, the Fergusons. So if I'm really talking about a top five fight, no, I don't think he deserves a top five fight. I think you're right. A Kevin Lee fight would be fun. Charles Oliveira, Paul Felder, Carlos Diego Fajeya, somebody like that, like a 15 to 7 guy, I think that makes sense. I know they might want to go with that top five because Michael Chandler's 34 years old at this point, and I think he is definitely past his prime, but I wouldn't go top five on this one.
Well, we talked about this before. We talked about why you put him in there as an alternate to Khabib, which is, you know, you got to do a little sleight of hand if you're the UFC. And the sleight of hand is, if he loses to a top five guy, we can pretend the reason why he lost was because he was fighting a top five guy. So we can get maybe we get one, maybe two top 10 fights out of him, maybe a co-main event or a main event of a fight night, just based on the fact that he lost to a guy we know to be good. If you have him fight 11 or 12 or 13 or even 10 and he loses that fight, well, now he's going to fight, you know, obviously you know how that would go along. But my point is that I'm with you. I don't know that he deserves it. I don't know anybody coming over from Bellator deserves it, because this is the age-old question of, is the worst fighter in Bellator better than, or UFC better than the best fighter in Bellator? Obviously, that's not directly the case. It's not like it's not like the number 20th ranked UFC fighter would go win a belt in Bellator. It's not that easy. But you know, you got to find out where this guy settles, and if you're going to get your, you know, the bang for your buck, you got to have him fight a top five guy, whether you whether he deserves it or not.
Well, I mean, John, we're going to find that one out tomorrow, because Beastin 25-8 is going to take on a plump and juicy Melvin Manhoff. How excited are you for that fight?
Oh, I'm over the moon for it.
It will be forgettable, to say the least. So let's move on. And if I've said it once, I've said it at least five times. John, hipsters like Dana White's Contender Series, but the true dyed-in-the-wool hardcores and the chicks, they dig The Ultimate Fighter. And I mean, just let me bang, bro. We've had so many great moments. We've had like pool scenes with Artem Lobov, his arms around the chicks. It's a weird place, but there's some good news on that tough front. And Tough 29, it's been confirmed for March of 2021. The coaches are TBA. The divisions are figured out. It's going to be bantamweight and middleweight. And so let's kind of earn some of the UFC executive pay, if we will. Who should the coaches be next? And I want to throw something in here too and add a little bit of a spin on this one. Is it weird, John, that the coaches are TBA and also you have to fill out an online application to be on this season?
It's weird. It doesn't seem like they're giving it the attention it deserves. It seems like a job, like a, it seems like a seasonal job. Like you want to work at Toys R Us. There is no Toys R Us anymore. You want to work at Amazon.
We have Toys R Us.
One of the many ways that Canada is beating the United States right now. So anyway, for me, let's get crazy with the coaches. I'm going to go way out of left field. I know that he had a fight booked at 125 pounds, but these are bantamweight fighters. Let's bring back Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. What better way to reintroduce TJ Dillashaw to the masses than to put those two maniacs together? Let them, you know, let all the alpha male stuff stew. And I think this honestly is a better way to reintroduce Dillashaw than just having him fight. So I'm going Garbrandt, Dillashaw, two.
If you want me to get really crazy, John, this would be, if you're going to bring back Tough, let's have two legends as coaches at bantamweight. You know who I'm talking about. These guys are ranked now at bantamweight. I'm talking about the former lightweight champ and the GOAT at featherweight. And you can tell me it's Max Holloway. You can tell me whoever you think it is. What if Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar were the coaches? Would people not want to watch that? I mean, I get it. Jose Aldo's English, not the best. But who cares? Two legends, and you're bringing back Tough. And the other thing, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You want to add a spin onto the reason why I was fired up in our first question? Why was I upset? Because the UFC, it was just kind of like, oh, by the way, there's Israel Adesanya just sitting there. We're having a fight between Uriah Hall and Anderson Silva. Hey, look, over there, it's Israel Adesanya. How cool is that? They just kind of like made this Tough announcement and then just kind of, yep, well, that happened. But also, by the way, the coaches are TBA and the fighters just apply online. Like you if you want a job at Wendy's, you know, you apply online. This is like a job at Wendy's. I think it's ridiculous. They made that commercial look so cool. Like there's going to be such an awesome production value. And there probably will be, but it just seems so stupid. Like, Contender Series zap so much talent. Like, what's left? You're going to bring Brad Katona back? Well, like, what are you going to do here?
You know, not for nothing. It wouldn't kill him to do another comeback season.
Is Jesse Taylor going to get a third shot at the UFC?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. One more thing I'll just touch on. If we're talking about bantamweight goats, I mean – here's the question. Do you have the coaches go on there that could potentially fight, Or do you just
Cruz put Coach Edgar?
Cruz Edgar be interesting? Cruz anybody be interesting? Obviously at bantamweight. So, you know, do you do one from each weight class? I don't really know who has. I guess you could do Whitaker Costa, because we'll get to that later. Those guys could be rumored to fight. Whitaker Costa might be interesting. Costa was on Tough. Whitaker, you know, I don't know that there's a lot of personality from Costa's perspective, but I don't know how interesting that would be. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, right. Whitaker Gastelum, wasn't that a season?
I think
I never watched this show. I never watched it. I'm not a tough guy.
Me neither. That's part of the problem. We gotta get Max Friedman on the phone. We gotta get Max Friedman on the phone for a lot of reasons, but that'd be one. He's almost a tough historian, that guy. All right, Craig, big question. Will the MMA hang out with their Yang out? Presidential candidate Andrew Yang wants to expand the Ali Act to MMA, which is something Project Spearhead has aimed to do and in fairness failed to do. So, Craig, does having the backing of a presidential candidate help the plight of the Ali Act for MMA?
I'm going to say this out of ignorance, John. Again, hardcore Canadian. I don't know your politics whatsoever. Is he still a presidential candidate?
Not now, no. Because the
honest to goodness, that wasn't meant to be a joke. Like, I'm dead serious.
Listen, if you want to talk politics, you said no politics, and now you keep dipping your toe in the water. No, he was a presidential candidate. Obviously, we only have two left. There are people that are getting votes other than Biden.
I thought there was three.
And Trump, yeah, but not him.
Okay. Doesn't matter. But I look at this. It's great to have somebody of power and influence, and especially in a position of authority and was on a national stage at a certain point, to at least throw their name behind this, because you got to think about it. I mean, it doesn't matter about what you think politically. Go back 15, 20, 25 years, people didn't want MMA in. I mean, you listen to Joe Rogan, and again, think about him what you will, but he's talked about it on a lot of different shows. And I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of the episode that he had with Luke Thomas from this week, because Luke Thomas touched on this quite a bit, and I'm not going to be able to do nearly as good of a job as he did. And he referenced a lot of great people as well there. So check that out. Hate to really throw shouts to other shows, but you gotta really respect those guys. And you listen to what he had to say about this one. It's tough. I hope that they can do something like this. But again, like you said, something Project Spearhead aimed to do. Well, where's Project Spearhead now? We hardly even hear about it. And the spot that these fighters are in, and I've got a question coming up that I'm going to kind of dive into it a little bit. You're in such a tough spot. Like, we've seen fighters like Mark Striegel's an example. He's a Filipino-American fighter that kind of moved all the way into Vegas to get an opportunity to fight into the UFC. When fights drop out and you're a fighter like that, John, what would you do if you're in that position? If they say to you, listen, we got a fight lined up for you. It's going to be a 4-fight UFC deal, but you're only going to get 10 and 10. And I'm a journeyman. What do I do? What would you do?
You got to take it.
I would take it. 100%. Yeah, of course you would. I would take that. And I could lose all three or four of those fights. I was a UFC fighter. So it's tough. I mean, would I want to see it? 100%. And again, Luke Thomas made the comparisons between John Jones and I think it was Regis Prograis. And he was saying, well, if you look at Regis's fights, he's getting paid millions of dollars, but Jones is only getting paid $400,000 to $500,000. And there's more of a middle class in MMA than there is in boxing. Well, that's certainly true, because I'm a very casual boxing observer. I know it's in the logo, but I just think it's a cool logo. I only watch boxing cards for maybe the top three or four fights, if that. It's usually the top one, but I'll watch three or four before the main event. But in MMA, I get jazzed for prelims. I get jazzed for the first few fights in the main card. And a lot of those fighters definitely aren't getting their due. So to really get into the meat and bones of it, or meat and potatoes, does having the backing help it? Not really. I mean, it's great, but does him saying, oh, geez, they should have it, is that going to make any or enact any sort of change? I really don't think it will.
Yeah, I think him being a presidential candidate adds some cachet, but let me tell you something. He's just under 2 million Twitter followers, and Dana White's a little bit over 5 million. So not that Twitter's everything, but I guess the question becomes is if Andrew Yang decided to put all of his effort and talent and attention onto getting the Ali Act into MMA, would he be more successful at doing that than Dana White would be in just completely discrediting him with a couple of press conferences? Probably not. I mean, if Dana White wanted to start dropping this guy's name and really shredding him as like a Johnny come lately to MMA and a guy who thinks he's just going to come in. That's the play I think that Dana would use. He would say, this guy's been an MMA fan for about 5 minutes and he's going to come in here and tell me what to do with the sport. I think that's the play, and I think he could do it, and Yang would be largely dismissed unless he made this his plight in life. And if that's the case, then yeah, and he dedicated all his time. He's like, yeah, Dana, you're right. I've been here for 5 minutes. Before those minutes, I've been studying up. So, you know, you got to – if he decided to do that and really knew what he was talking about, I think that him, a combination of him, Leslie Smith, and you need a big-name fighter. Like if they got Connor or Jones or like if they got a coalition of guys like we thought we were getting back when that big photo op with Cerrone and GSP and all that, those guys, whatever the hell they were, then maybe. But I just don't see that. So I think that Yang will probably be dismissed.
Well, John, listen, I'm gassed up today. Open the show. It's cold as all fuck here. I mean, we have 5 centimeters of snow. It's ice. It sucks. And I'm in Canada. But I am hot about this one. An article happened to fall my way today titled Kevin Kroom, Jose Flores issued NAC suspensions for marijuana use, comma, Nico Price also cited. That last part didn't surprise me at all. I mean, Nico Price loves himself the weed, but we've harped on this topic before. And I'll be honest, I can see this incredibly black and white with no shades of gray, but I can also see it the other way. And I look at this, you look at Kevin Kroom, does the punishment fit the crime here? And I'll kind of set the scene. So Roosevelt Roberts had a fight booked, and a day before weigh-ins, the fight fell out. So Kevin Kroom steps in to take the fight. And if you don't know anything about the hard-hitting hillbilly, he kind of had one of those like Anthony Smith type of records. He was a journeyman on the lower scenes, comes up, fights Roosevelt Roberts, who's a prospect, submits him in the first round, wins a $50,000 performance bonus, and now that win and all that glory is gone. I mean, he still gets to keep the money, but the win's overturned to a no contest. What do you think about this?
You're going to hate this answer. And I'm not even that conservative of a guy, but you're going to hate this answer, I think. It's like anything else. If you got a fight booked and you had a heart condition, if you had a fight booked and you have an injury, if you got a fight booked, when they booked a fight, it is incumbent upon you to say, I am either ready to meet all the specifications of fighting this fight or I'm not. And if you're not, you can't blame the governing body for saying, oh, well, you know, you guys needed a fighter and I was a fighter. And that means that whatever the rules are, go out the window because I took the fight on short notice. Yeah, but you took the fight and you took the fight knowing that you were within a window of using marijuana, and it's either legal or illegal. If it's illegal, based on that commission, then you got a problem on your hands. And it's not the commission's fault. It's not the UFC's fault. It's your fault because you took a fight knowing that, you know, this is the state, I guess, that you were in. So, you know, all the consequences that come with that are the consequences that you have to take.
I look at it a different way. So for me, I agree to a point, and there's an easy way to tear into my argument. Brock Lesnar, when he fought Mark Hunt. It's like, hey, you get an exemption, you're going to fight Mark Hunt. And then after the fact, it's like, hey, this guy was full of horse meat and steroids and whatever else they give you outside of Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And then I look at Kevin Kroom, and I look at Nico Price too. So for Nico Price, he had a draw against Donald Cerrone. But it's not like that fight came together on short notice. He knew about that fight. So he was the one that decided, hey, whether it's CBD, whether it's a bong rip, a spliff, whatever it is, I'm going to hit that shit. I'm going to enjoy myself. And I'm going to have a fight against Donald Cerrone. It's going to be fun as shit. That's great. You can't do that, Nico. You know, going forward, you can't do that. If you screw up there, it's your fault. But for Kevin Kroom, again, a career journeyman, like I kind of referenced in the last thing, and you get an opportunity to fight in the world's biggest stage, what are you going to do? Oh, gee, sorry, Mr. Andy Foster. Sorry, NAC. I smoked a joint, a week and a half ago? It might be in my system. I can't take this fight. The UFC is going to pass on you. You may never get a shot again. And for them to overturn, like, I, this is where I see it in black and white. You know, if you knowingly took that, you had the fight, and then it gets overturned to a no contest. Well, you're knucklehead. It's your fault. But if you're Kevin Kroom, you come in on short notice, you have the fight. why are you overturning wins to no contest? The other thing too, it's marijuana. And I get it. There's always that conversation. Is it really a performance enhancer? Well, it helps with recovery. So, nah. But is it any worse than anything else? Like, really? Really?
Listen, it's legal in the state of Arizona now, so we're all rejoicing. But
here's, and all here's, of Canada.
Here's my thing, I guess, where I'm with you, in that, you know, what happened doesn't change. John Jones' second fight with Daniel Cormier got overturned. We all saw it. We all know what happened. No one's under any illusions that DC won that fight, whether it's no contest or not. So if you're Kroom, I think that you, you know, and this may be pushing back a little bit what I said earlier, but like, I think you take the fight, understand the consequences if they come, and just say, oh, well, those are the consequences. But now you still have tape. The fight still happened. And the next person that you're going to get booked with or by promotion wise, it's either the UFC or it's not. And you can still say, yeah, this is what I did in my last fight. You know, yeah, it was overturned. And some promotions might care and some promotions might not. They might say, well, I want to book you. Are you still getting high? And you say, yes, I am. No, I mean, you deal with that when you deal with it. But my point is that you have this performance that you can then say, this is something I did. All right, Craig, speaking of commissions and speaking of rules, let's move on to sparring sessions. I noticed in this last fight that new replay rules were in effect. And it included a review official for replay and the ability to stop and restart a fight anytime. Now I'm going to keep this very simple in the questioning, which is, you know, are the new rules the way of the future or the demise of the sport? And I know it seems like in saying the demise of the sport that I'm being a little bit dramatic about it. Maybe I am. But I guess the question I have is, like other sports, like, you know, baseball and whatnot, they struggle with how long their sports take based on rules, right? And MMA has typically been a sport that moves very quickly. So do you think the ability to stop a fight anytime, or the ability to have another set of eyes saying, oh, that happened, there's eye poke, or whatever, affects the flow? I mean, obviously it affects the flow, but does that matter?
It's a tough one. I mean, if you ask a soccer fan about this, they're going to say, well, look at VAR. And they hate VAR. They think it's the dumbest thing ever. Did you break the plane? Were you offside? Is that goal actually a goal now? They hate it. I mean, they want referee discretion for the most part. There's some things that it helps out with, but for the most part, speaking generally, people don't like VAR. I look at it in baseball as a necessary evil, but the thing, and if I can reference my favorite announcer in the game as a homer, it's a guy who actually got to call the World Series. My guy, Buck Martinez. I mean, if you want to see a highlight reel, Buck Martinez breaking both legs in the same game. Like, this guy is a legend. He's a legend in Canada. He has the best hair in the game. I'm kind of modeling it after him. I have a little bit of a Buck impersonation, but he basically said that, you know, you look at the plays at second base and they don't make any sense anymore. And you watch them, and if a catcher makes a throw to second base and the guy slides over the bag and for a brief second he's off the bag and that tag holds, well, you should be out, right? If you're not a baseball fan, I apologize for the snooze fest. You should be out. But the umpire is not going to see that. 95% of the time, the umpire is not going to see that. So it slows the game down. It reduces human error. And I get why the UFC is bringing this in. It's another thing. We saw it in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year. And we saw it the year before that, where it ruined a season for a team. I want to say it was Vegas when they played St. Louis in 2019. Like, that was pretty much it on an offside call. So I look at it in MMA as something that we kind of do need. I mean, you remember Ed Herman's last fight where he got kicked in the nuts, but apparently his nuts are way up here. I mean, I've seen Ed Herman up close. I don't think he has nuts up there. Maybe he does. If he does, I mean, that's a good party trick. Follow the Beck Rawlings thing. Go on OnlyFans with that stuff. But overall, I think we need replay. I think you got to have it. There's too many fight ending sequences. A lot of people talked about the Ed Herman fight, but the fight that Jessica Rose Clark had against Sarah Alpire, where Alpire was like, her butt cheeks were half an inch on top of the mat when she got kneed to the face and nobody knew what happened. That was one of those ones where if we had the use of replay and not just the limited use of replay, it would have helped everybody out. And I think we're going to see that more and more. If you have the technology, why don't you use it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the two sports that stick out of my head would be tennis. Tennis went to a machine to call ins and outs. And when it first happened, it was a long time ago. But when it first happened, you know, John McEnroe couldn't argue with an adult, with a person anymore. So now he's arguing with a machine. And the thing you love about McEnroe is he goes, are we playing the machine? Are we not? I remember this one tirade that he had where he didn't know if he was playing the machine or not. But the other thing would be,
John, time out. How many years ago was that?
Oh, it's been a while, man. It's been like 20
years. I'm 26 years old. Has John McEnroe played tennis in the last 26 years?
While you were alive?
I know him from that Adam Sandler movie that one time.
Yeah, no. Wow. Yeah, he's played within the last 26 years.
Was that Mr. Deeds? That was Mr. Deeds.
Yeah, it was Mr. Deeds. But no, the other thing is, if we get back to baseball, we talk about if the technology is available, let's use it. Listen, we could have computers calling balls and strikes. But the purists are like, no, we don't want somebody behind. I mean, you don't even need – you know, you make a sound, okay, but it would make the game more correct, and it'd make the game more efficient. It would make the game more a lot of things. But, you know, purists don't want it. I think there's a way to do this. I mean, there's only going to be certain things that you use it for. Eye pokes, you know, strikes to a grounded opponent, did someone not tap, groin shots. I think for that kind of stuff, it's good to clean it up. All right, Craig, let's move on to our segment of the week. This week it's called What's His Play? I'm going to give you a scenario that a fighter is currently facing. You can play his manager, his publicist, his PR person, or just someone that has his ear. And you can tell me what's his or potentially her play. Let's start with Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy said this week that he is innocent and has been the target of an extortion plot. He wants to rehabilitate his name for his kids. What's Hardy's play here?
I'm not the NFL. So if I'm Dean Thomas or Rashad Evans, and I'm in his corner, which, again, he's no longer at ATT. He's training with those guys in their gym. Jillian Robertson's there. I mean, the guy's trying to turn over a new leaf. It's tough for him because his past is very dubious, and the NFL passed on him. And if the NFL let Antonio Brown back. Like, he's playing this week. So, yikes. But if you're, you know, Greg, if you're Dean Thomas, rather, or anybody that's in and around him, Rashad Evans, maybe kind of cool it on that talk and just kind of talk about the fact that, hey, I'm a new guy. I'm in a totally different sport. My life has changed. This is Greg Hardy 2.0, and I'm here to fight and you know, put together a good name. It's a weird one. That's a really tough one to try and answer.
Well, for me, I think that, listen, there is no one who is hated more than Michael Vick, right? So, you know, I tell my students and I tell my children all the time is that the fastest way to get yourself out of trouble is to admit what you did and start fixing it, whatever it was, right? The thing that got you in trouble, not something else, right? If my son is being disrespectful, cleaning his room does not change that. Speaking respectfully to his mother and his sister and myself is what changes that, right? So to do that. So for me, I think that Hardy needs to really, I almost said this in a very horrible way, but reach out to women's groups. I was going to say go at. But reach out to women's groups. The reason why Michael Vick was forgiven is because of how much work he did with the SPCA and how much, you know, he got involved with animals and saw the error of his ways and did a lot to change things. He was seen visibly on the other side of the issue. You can't continue to be the prince of war or whatever the hell he's calling himself these days. And then, you know, you gotta be transparent. Make your wife or girlfriend, whoever's in your life, visible. Show yourself reaching out to women's groups. Trust me, they will want your help, right? And if they're rough on you at the beginning, they should be. You've earned it. So take your licks. That's what everybody wants to see anyway, and rehabilitate yourself. All right, Craig, Dana says Anderson is done. Silva, that is, as if there was another one. Anderson says he has more fights in him. What is Anderson's play? Can you imagine seeing him in a Bellator cage?
I unfortunately can, because I watched Fedor Emelianenko fight 265-pound Quentin Rampage Jackson. So can I see Anderson Silva in the cage? You're fucking right, I can. Do I want to? No, I don't want to see it at all. So if I'm Anderson Silva's manager, I sit him down and say, hey, I realize you have this one fight deal. Maybe reach out to Dana White. If you want to earn an extra little bit of money, try and get the Chuck Liddell deal. Try and work with the UFC. Try and grow the brand in other global markets. You know how you have a performance institute in China? Maybe make Anderson Silva like a brand ambassador, like Wayne Gretzky's an NHL ambassador to China. Maybe Performance Institute in Brazil, or maybe just push the game there. It's already big there. It's already big in Canada and the States and a lot of the major markets, but get him in a developing market. Try and have him in an advisory role, in a training role, something like Forrest Griffin is now. Keep him involved, but don't have him fight. maybe have them train people, but don't have them fight.
I agree. And I think that, you know, the UFC, they're all executives. They get it. I mean, Anderson Silva needs his golden parachute or his whatever, his 401k. And that should be the Performance Institute in Brazil. And I think that they need to be ready for this. You know, if you want to hold up your fighters in a certain light, then give them that thing that they can do. Now, in lieu of that, or in the absence of that, I wouldn't mind seeing him and George St. Pierre on Submission Underground. That'd be a lot of fun. So maybe reach out to Chael. Maybe him and Chael at Submission Underground. Maybe Chael says, listen, let's write this ship, Anderson. I said I didn't know the rules. I thought if you tapped, you lost that round, obviously. And then they grappled.
I told that story about the Nogueira brothers trying to pet a bus.
Yeah. You know, listen, I think that if I'm Anderson, I get in with somebody that has a Brazilian – I give a Brazilian face to a different brand, like Submission Underground Brazil. Him and Chael working together, there could be something there. All right, Craig, you're the winner of Thiago Santos, Glover Teixeira, and you just watched as your newly crowned champion, who obviously hasn't cleared out the division because he just won the belt, booked a fight with a middleweight champion. What's your play?
So, official prediction on this fight, not very confident. People are pretty hard on me. John, did you watch the prediction video?
I haven't yet, no. It's in my inbox.
That doesn't matter. I'll spoil it for you. And if you're watching this show this far in, congrats. You probably might have seen the pick. We both picked Glover Teixeira to win. We both picked 41-year-old Glover Teixeira to win. I don't know how 36-year-old's knees are going to hold up after double ACL surgery. So if I'm Glover Teixeira's manager, I say, hey, hold out. Hold out as long as you can. Because you're 41 years old and all you're holding on for is a title shot. And if you're Thiago Santos at 36 and I'm his manager and he wins, I'd say fight the winner of, I don't know, Prahaksha's got a fight coming up. Fight the winner of that fight. Like, keep yourself relevant. You need maybe another couple impressive performances, some more spinning wheel kick wins over Jack Marshman, stuff like that. For Glover, hold out as long as you can.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to argue with there. I mean, I think that these guys, you're not going to gain yourself. You're not going to stop Adesanya Blachowicz from happening. So don't go to the media.
I wish.
Don't go to the media and try and play that game. You got to just say, okay, I'm going to keep fighting my fights. I think I'm the best 205 pounder in the world. So it doesn't really matter who I fight. You know, sometimes it's smart for fighters to just kind of mentally, and listen, Sugar Sean O'Malley said he didn't even mentally lose. So just mentally say, you know what? I'm the uncrowned champion. I'd fight these guys anyway. What's the difference? I'm going to go in there. I'm going to win, and I'm going to continue to keep things moving. All right, Craig. I don't know about friend of the show, but certainly favorite of the show, Brandon Moreno, was unhappy with his flyweight title snub at UFC 255. You've been calling for a title shot for Moreno since John McEnroe was still playing tennis. So, but it doesn't seem to be happening. What's Moreno's play here?
I couldn't tell you. I had this argument a couple nights ago with Matt Allen. Like, I don't get it. Why did they go with Perez over Moreno when they were both scheduled to fight? And I'm 99% sure Brandon Moreno was higher in the rankings. Well, why? It doesn't make any sense. So what's the play? If I'm Brandon Moreno's manager, I say, all right, you know how the UFC cut you off a loss and you went to LFA and won and then you came back to the UFC? It's back to the drawing board. There's two fights he can take. A, you take the winner of Manel Cape and Alexander Pantoja. That's one thing you can do. There's one other flyweight that doesn't have a dance partner, and he just beat Pantoja. You fight Askar Askarov. Those are the fights. And again, it's a rematch with Askarov because they drew. So for me, that's probably the fight that you make. And that fight didn't go well for my guy, Assassin Baby.
You know, I'll leave the fight bookings to you because you're better at it. But if I'm his manager, here's the pep talk I give him. Listen, bud, Tony Ferguson's crying his eyes out for you somewhere, okay? You want to talk about winning a lot of fights and not getting a title shot? Like, a little tough love, maybe step in and say, listen, have you earned it? Yes. Is it coming? No. Let's deal with it. Let's take out the next guy and figure it out. All right, Craig, let's talk about the other side of this Adesanya Blachowicz fight, which is that Uriah Hall says Israel Adesanya is taking easy fights. Robert Whittaker says he has no interest in fighting Paulo Costa, only an Adesanya rematch. What's the play for both here? And is there any way that you could see the play for both of them being each other?
I mean, if you're Robert Whittaker's manager, apparently you can just sit, squat, grab that golden egg that's coming out of that goose's ass, because you booked 4-0 Jacob Malcoon to be on a pay-per-view that I paid $69.99 for. John, I can tell you laughed at that initially, but you don't actually find it funny anymore. But I still think it's ridiculous. So to Robert Whittaker's manager, I say this. Or if I'm Robert Whittaker's manager, I say this. I say, Rob, listen here. You remember how you had that season of tough with Kelvin Gastelum that Craig Allen doesn't remember? You remember that? Let's just hold out. Let's just do what we told Glover Teixeira to do. Hold out. We just hold out. And if you're Uriah Hall, you're in the Santos spot, because Uriah Hall's 36 years old. Ain't getting any younger. And this is a middleweight division where, John, if I remember correctly from the start of the show, there's a season of the Ultimate Fighter at middleweight coming up, right? But they don't have any coaches. They don't have any fighters. You have a division that's in a weird place. If you're Uriah Hall, just take another fight. You beat Anderson Silva that wasn't even ranked. While you're ranked, you need like three or four more fights.
I think that if I'm Whittaker, I'd rather fight Paulo Costa with a belt on the line. I don't want to fight him before then. So I think these guys make good bedfellows. I think that, you know, if I'm Whittaker, I'm like,
that's a saying.
Yeah.
Did they use that in the John McEnroe days?
They did. Well, you know how they say certain things make strange bedfellows. I kind of turn it on its head. I try to.
No, I've never heard that in my life.
Well, it's that happens in America. A lot of things happen in America that don't make sense. Like
you know, the Toby Keith song.
Yeah.
Only in America.
The Toby Keith song. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And neither does, you know, stopping a electoral count in the middle of counting. But that's neither here nor there. Anyway, my point is that I think these two would be good dance partners, if that's a better analogy for you. And I think that Whittaker gets a fight that's a rematch over a guy he already beat. Hall gets a fight with a guy coming off a big win. They're both kind of coming off wins. If they can somehow turn this into a tough coaching gig as well, all the better for them. They both have a tough history. So that'd be great. All right, Craig, let's move on to For the Gram. Craig, this is one from last week that we just didn't have time to really talk about in depth. I don't know if we're going to talk about in depth here. I just want to get your thoughts. Mike Mazzulli and Brandon Gertz got into it at the weigh-ins. Mazzulli kind of treated Gertz like a petulant child because he was upset about weighing in. Obviously, Gertz was going through the weighing in process, so that's why he was pissed off. I'm going to ask you a question and not say who the guy is, just to give you an opportunity to say who you think is wrong in here. Craig, what's this guy's deal?
John, I will say this. So when this situation unfolded, I put out a tweet and I linked a piece of text to it. I'm not going to go back to the tweet, but I'll give you just a rough estimate of what happened. So this all takes place. Mike Mazzulli yells at Brandon Gertz. Brandon Gertz yells at Mike Mazzulli. Brandon Gertz takes his pants off. That's how every argument starts and ends, right? Brandon Gertz taking his pants off. Gertz weighs in, and then all's calm. And then the media wanted to reach out to Mike Mazzulli, but Mike Mazzulli wouldn't give a comment. So Mike Mazzulli went through Bellator's PR guy, CJ Tuttle. Nice guy. I'm assuming you know him. I've dealt with him before. Nice guy. And Mike Mazzulli gave a statement and said, hey, behind closed doors, Brandon Gertz and I apologized. How chicken shit is that? How fucking chicken shit is that? Make your own fucking statement. You're not a Bellator employee. You're a commissioner. And oh, by the way, you're a fucking commissioner. Be a fucking professional. This guy weighed in at 146 fucking pounds. And then Mike Mazzulli goes, no, you weighed 146 and a quarter. And Gertz is like, no, I didn't. And Brandon Gertz has only had one fight at featherweight. Every other fight's at lightweight. Have you ever seen a boring Brandon Gertz fight? No. And he's one of the nicest guys in MMA from what I've seen. Not from personal experience. He also loves his pit bull. I got no problems with Brandon Gertz. He seems like a nice guy. Mike Mazzulli, take your stupid fucking vest off and nut up like Ed Herman. He's got nuts in his chest. Be more like Ed Herman. So yeah, this guy's deal? Grow up. This is stupid.
I'm with you. We've heard some stuff from Mike Mazzulli before. I mean, he seems to be one of these commissioners that likes to flex here and there. I'm with you. I think that, you know, picking fights with fighters who are cutting weight is a silly endeavor as it is. But yeah, I think it was such a small margin. That why go at a guy who, by all accounts, does things the way they're supposed to be done, is a good dude.
And Mike Mazzulli, like, it's weird with the Mohegan tribe, right? Because if Bellator wants to sanction an event in Ireland, it's under the Mohegan Sun tribe and Mike Mazzulli, or under Mohegan, yeah, right? the Mohegan Tribe, not Mohegan Sun. I'm mixing up the casino, but it's under the Mohegan Athletic Commission, whatever it's called. Sorry. Not 100% accurate, but Mike Mazzulli oversees the sanctioning, more or less. Yeah. Bellator 187, when Charlie Ward had a fight and Conor McGregor jumped in the cage, Mike Mazzulli was all over that shit. He was all over Conor McGregor. We're going to fine him. We're going to suspend him. Like, the UFC is basically going to have a problem. Why do you care? What does that affect your bottom line? I mean, yeah, it makes you look bad because your commissioners couldn't hold Conor McGregor out of the cage. But apart from that, what, like, why would you even go on shows and do interviews and say that? To what benefit does that hold?
Yeah, something that happened when John McEnroe was still playing tennis was Suge Knight of Death Row fame. You're going to love how I pull this around.
Suge Knight over that guy before that movie?
He went on to this, I think it was the Source Awards, and he said, you know, if you don't want to produce this all in your videos, and he was calling out Puff Daddy. That's kind of Mazzulli. Mazzulli just wants to get involved in things that he shouldn't get involved in. He wants to be the star of the show. He wants his name in the he kind of is trying to live vicariously in a way through these guys and get involved and, like, be on their level. Or, you know, he's like half a Dana White, half an Andy Foster. He's just
the Angel Hernandez of MMA.
Yes.
The Joe West of MMA.
Let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Cynthia Calvillo threw some shade at Lauren Murphy after their fight, saying that she took an easy paycheck fight. And then Calvillo looks like she's booking a fight with Caitlin Chookagian. Craig, the odd part about this one is that Calvillo was the one who pulled out of the fight. And then Murphy had to find a new dance partner, and obviously she's going to take what's available. A couple questions here. Is Calvillo out of line? You know, they're fighters, so out of line is a relative term. But do you think the UFC owes this fight to Murphy? Because it feels like Calvillo kind of moved up by pulling out. It was weird.
John, nothing with this promotion makes any sense. So Cynthia Calvillo, strawweight, comes into flyweight and beats the number one contender, Jessica Ai. Wouldn't she be the next contender? Nope. So let's look at it this way. Maya has a fight and wins against Calderwood. Maya gets a title shot. Andrade comes in and beats the fuck out of Caitlin Chookagian. Where does that leave Andrade? Well, to me, I look at this. Calvillo should fight Murphy, and Chookagian is kind of out of the picture. And then you have Andrade fighting who? Who's left? Well, she just beat Calvillo. I don't know. This division doesn't make any sense. To me, Murphy Calvillo or Calvillo Andrade. Those are the two fights that you make. Well, now Murphy's out. What does Calvillo really gain out of beating Chookagian? Because Chookagian just got beat by Andrade, and Calvillo beat the number one contender at the time. See? I'm talking in riddles, but none of this makes sense.
Yeah, I think the UFC sometimes has to deal with stuff that we don't understand, which is we need there's a fight happening here. We want to move this division along. Obviously, Murphy just fought. But for me, it's like, don't punish Murphy. She was supposed to fight Calvillo on that night. She didn't. So then you make Calvillo wait. You don't make Murphy wait. So, you know, if it takes 6 or 8 or 12 weeks for Murphy to be ready to fight Calvillo, so be it. You should have dropped out of the fight. I'm not saying that I'm like victim blaming someone that got injured, but it's like, you're the person that made that fight not happen. So let's not punish Murphy.
If Calvillo takes a fight against Chookagian, she's no closer to a title, and Murphy fights Andrade, and there's your next title challenger. And she's going to fight Valentina Shevchenko because Maya's not beating Shevchenko.
All those things make sense. All right, Craig, let's move on to posting the book. Craig, the greatest night in Tito Ortiz's life was November 24th, 2018. And I know because I was there. It was the night he finally avenged his losses to Chuck Liddell. I think the ghost of Chuck Liddell was fighting that night, but he beat him. So that was before the other day when Tito Ortiz was elected to City Council of Huntington Beach. Craig, I'll keep it simple. Is Tito the hero Huntington Beach has been waiting for?
I got to ask a question first.
Sure.
Tito Chuck 3.
Yes.
What did it smell like in that arena?
Smelled like victory.
I'm guessing it smelled like Axe body spray and sex.
Yeah, it did. It smelled like sex and candy. Remember that song?
Playground. Big fan.
Big fan. It was the first time I'd ever been to the Forum. I actually liked the Forum. But it was, you could tell it was not. It was a little low rent.
Inglewood's always up to no good. But I look at this and Tito Ortiz, Huntington Beach, he is the Huntington Beach bad boy. So is he going to dig them into a grave? Well, no, he's a city councilor. How much power does a city councilor have? I know in Canada, not a whole lot. So I doubt in Huntington Beach, Tito Ortiz has much influence. It brings notoriety. Is he the hero they've been waiting for? I bet there's more heroes in that city council that aren't named Tito Ortiz.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I wish that Tito could have figured out a way, and I tried to do this myself. I caught a creative slash writing slash graphics block earlier when I was trying to do this. If he could have flipped the name into something city council related, like how when Jesse the Body Ventura ran for, I think, governor in Minnesota, he was Jesse the Mind, not Jesse the Body, or like, you know, whatever. So if he could have done like the Huntington Beach, whatever. I like I said, I couldn't think of it. But yeah.
I live in the Baja, the Baja of California. We don't have power. We just watch VHS tapes.
Trust me, there's a lot of money in Huntington Beach. I've been there many times. They're not worried about Tito Ortiz.
Is there a lot of money with Jesse Ventura? Because I can do that Jesse Ventura impression all day. All right, John, we're going to move in to start the conversation. We always say shouts to Reddit, and we've been hot and heavy over the last year and a half doing this show to appeal to that Reddit audience. So finally, we put out a start the conversation to the fine people in the underground, and they responded. So a little bit inside baseball, a little sneaky on my part. I've been u/PrideRulesMMA. If you want to find me there, that's me on Reddit. And that's the username. That could go six ways to Sunday and all kinds of sideways. But the question that I threw out there to everybody on Reddit is Dana White scorching the earth for fighters he's done with? Smart business, or is it unfair to them? So I threw that out there on Reddit. We have all kinds of responses, actually. I don't know why I couldn't say responses. I also threw it out there on Instagram, and I put out a poll. So I said, this week, start the conversation. Check it out. To that question, John, the thumbs up to, is it smart business? 40%. Thumbs down, 60%. I was surprised it was that close. So if we throw it over to Reddit, the top comment is, can you scorch yourself because this title's awful? All right, well, that one's fair. The next one, everyone wants to see Silva retire. And that thread goes on and on and on. The next one, and this is by Do Steal Your Ho Choi. Well, that's funny. Do Ho Choi. It's not smart business because no matter what Dana says, it's not going to stop any other organization from signing them if that organization was already interested. It's just one of the many asshole dickhead things Dana likes to do. John, where do you fall on the spectrum? Because, I mean, it's a hard and fast 60-40 over on Instagram with the at Fight Name Picks fans. Over on Reddit, it seems to be split. There's a lot of people that can see it either way. So it has been a pretty divisive issue. Where do you side on this one?
It's weird, man, because, like, you know, my relationship with Donald Trump is that I respect him as someone who's able to get elected, but I don't like him as a person. So, like, I respect him as a candidate, but not a president. Same thing with Dana. I respect why Dana does this. I do think he wastes a little bit of energy on someone that he's already saying he thinks is washed. So if you think Anderson Silva doesn't have that much left to give, well, then he'll go out into the marketplace and prove you right. So why take a shot at him? Why say, you know, and the thing that really bothers me about this is Dana will wring the hell out of that towel until it's bone dry and then just let the guy say, well, you know, and then once it's bone dry, like before the Uriah Hall fight, he was happy to say Anderson still got a little left in the tank, but somehow Anderson loses in the fourth round to Uriah Faber and he's washed. Uriah Hall. To me, if he lost in the fourth round to Uriah Faber, he definitely should not fight anymore. But I think for me, it's more about why he does it. Like, let these guys go out on a high note. Don't try to manipulate the situation for what's best for you. That is smart business. So I don't want to, you know, give credit to both. If I had to take a choice or make a choice, what you're asking me to do, I think it's a dickhead move.
I kind of think it's a dickhead move too. Like, I can see it both ways, but if you're going to go out there and in one breath say, this is the greatest of all time, this is the best middleweight we've ever had. He was a champ for the longest amount of time. Think of all the fun fights, the Chris Lieben fight. Like, there's so many good things about Anderson Silva. And then after is what could be his last fight, he still has one fight left on his deal, to go out and say, oh, it was a mistake to even book that fight against Uriah Hall. I get it. You got to promote a fight, right? I understand that. But after the fact, that's almost like a slight on his legacy. Like, were you saying that after BJ Penn lost for the third time, the fourth time, the fifth time? We're saying, geez, that was a mistake. And then you roll BJ Penn back out there. You didn't. And hey, maybe that's covering your tracks. You don't want Anderson Silva to become the next BJ Penn. But if I had a look at his record in his last seven fights, it's almost BJ Penn-esque, is it not? I know, yeah. I know they've been more competitive than the BJ Penn fights. So I do get it from, you know, to a certain extent. But I mean, I'm looking at more of the comments on Reddit from TreeBear1 saying, I don't think other promotions really care if Dana's trash a fighter. They have some name recognition, they'll get signed, but nothing is beneath Dana. People think boxing is crooked, but the Joe Silva type stories we'll hear about Dana after he leaves are going to be on another level. And another one from Instagram, _model. It's just Dana airing out his frustrations. He only cares about fights being entertaining. He doesn't give a shit about these guys' health. Otherwise, he wouldn't have let a lot of freak show fights he's allowed in the first place. Saying Anderson has no business fighting and letting him fight is just fucking stupid. He went on to shit on both Hall and Silva. Dude's a full-on asshole. And that those are direct quotes. I'm reading that right off of Reddit. So people going hard in the paint in the underground. I agree with them to a certain extent. Again, it goes both ways, but I think it's pretty underhanded. And I mean, you got to think about it too. If you're somebody like, let's pick Piotr Jan. Poor old Piotr Jan. He beats Jose Aldo. He becomes a bantamweight champ. Let's say Piotr Jan wins two or three fights. Well, who's to say after Piotr Jan loses in his fourth fight against, I don't know, Corey Sandhagen, that Dana White doesn't come out and go, well, he's just who we thought he was. He's just a chicken shit. Go back to Russia. You're never going to win again. Like, do you really want to fight for a president that's saying that after your greatest of all time loses? How much faith do you have in a guy like that?
Yeah, I guess, and I guess we could end it on this. I agree with everything you said, but I guess the way I would end it is, if you're going to give me my flowers, don't lay them on my grave. You know, let me have them out when I'm on stage and toss them at my feet. Don't say, okay, you know, he was a hell of a guy while he was alive. You know, I don't need that. I don't need you to give me my eulogy. Just tell me I was great. Let me move on. All right, guys, there you have it. The episode of Early Stoppage on Fight Night Picks is in the books. Be sure to comment under the video. Let us know what you'd like to see next from the show here on YouTube, but also on iTunes and Spotify. Craig can be fought at Craig Allen FMP. I can be fought at SM Quarterman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
U/Pride Rules MMA on the underground.
Get that Reddit kicked up.